Going to talk about prediction of soil carbon fractions using middle infrared spectroscopy across Florida.
We're changing geographic region now.
Good morning, everyone. My work links on very nicely to what Merrill has just presented. In fact, we've worked quite closely in our actual production, and they actually ran our mid-infrared spectra for us in their lab in Hawaii. So quite a bit of the methodology I'm not going to really go about and repeat, because you've actually already seen it in Merrill's talk. What are we looking at? Okay. We know that in terrestrial soil carbon, there is a lot of information a lot of carbon variability in the different carbon pools. And we would like to be able to take a look at and see how is carbon moving between these different pools. So from the labile pool through to your stable, between your hydrolyzable and your recalcitrant pools. And we're wanting to find a way in which you can go about analyzing these rapidly. To continuously take soil samples and have to go into the laboratory and analyze them is expensive. And so we want to find a cheaper method to look at being able to monitor these carbon fractions over time to really get an idea and see how is carbon moving between these pools so that we can create better models in order for us to analyze carbon sequestration. So what we have done is we have taken a look at the use of mid-infrared spectroscopy and seen how does it actually, how is it able to monitor and model these different soil carbon pools. Merrill presented just on total carbon, but what we're going to take a look at is actually modeling total carbon, soil organic carbon, hydrolyzable carbon, and recalcitrant carbon. And our study area that we've based this on is on Florida. Okay, what was our sampling design? As I said, we were based in Florida, and we divided Florida up into 12 soil suborders, 14 land use land cover classes, to create 89 strata. Within these strata, 1,014 sites were located. These were located with DGPS. And at each of these sites, four samples were collected. A sample core, or each sample core, was 20 centimeters by 5.8 centimeters. These were bulked, and this was considered as a single sample for a site. The sampling took place over 1.25 years. Okay. These samples were then analyzed for total carbon and inorganic carbon, and soil organic carbon was calculated as a subtraction of these two. The hydrolyzable carbon was calculated through hot water extractable methods, and the recalcitrant carbon was calculated through acid reflux methods. As I mentioned before, our samples were sent across through to Hawaii for mid-infrared spectroscopy measurements. So I won't go into this in much detail, but the samples were bore milled. They were measured in the spectrum, in the spectrometer. We landed up removing a small regions of the spectra, which were as effect of carbon and hydrogen that were not managed to be removed through potassium bromide background. And on the final spectra, we performed an outlier detection to see which of the spectra did not actually fit into each of the soil suborders. As a result of that, 13 samples or 13 of the spectra were removed through the outlier detection, and we were left with 1,001 samples. These were split into a 70-30 split. 701 samples were used for calibration, and 300 samples were used for the validation. On the spectra, we performed a variety of pre-processing techniques, and when I present the results, I'll show you the different techniques that we used. And these pre-processed spectra were then used and analyzed using partial least squares regression and random forest regression. The models were then assessed with the validation sample that was kept separate from the calibration, and these are assessed with the R-squared, RMSE, and RPD. I'll be presenting the R-squared for you today, but yes, you know that there are these other metrics which have also been calculated. So firstly, what were our laboratory results? You see that we have a very wide spread. So from 1.3 through to 523%, or grams per kilogram. And what you see is that the total carbon and soil organic carbon have very similar values. Across Florida, we have very little inorganic carbon. And so what you'll see in our results that are presented is that both the total carbon and soil organic carbon models are almost identical. And then the recalcitrant carbon and hydrolyzable carbon, you can see that our hydrolyzable carbon is a very small fraction of the total carbon content that we have. Now onto our actual results of the spectroscopy. What you see is that our results are all pretty good. This was for the partial least squares regression, and these are the different pre-processing techniques that we applied. So we have the raw spectra, multiplicative scatter correction, with first derivative, standard normal variate correction, Savitsky-Golay smoothing. All of my Savitsky-Golay was using a 5-window smoothing. This is applied with a quadratic, first derivative with quadratic, log 10 absorbance, and log 10 absorbance with Savitsky-Golay smoothing. For the partial least squares, we found that for the log 10 absorbance produced our highest results, and this is producing the highest R-squareds, the highest RPD, and the lowest RMSE. So at least in this particular result, we see, okay, irrespective of the carbon fraction, this processing technique appears to be our best approach. However, you can see across the board, our results are all very similar. And just to note, here we have the multiplicative scattering was the lowest, and except for these two, all of our RPD values were in the range between 3.5 and 4.5. And only these two fell at a range just over 2, which is still considered to be good models. You'll also note that, total carbon, soil organic carbon, and recalcitrant carbon produce far better models than our hydrolyzable carbon. However, as you see, the models for hydrolyzable carbon are still greater than 85%. So nothing to be embarrassed about. Okay. Moving on to random forest. The results are equally good, although we see that the partial least squares were slightly better. So the partial least squares were sitting at values of about 95. But here we're looking at about 93% R-squareds produced. What we do see is that there is no single pre-processing technique which produced the best irrespective of the carbon fraction that we're using. But again, almost all across the board, irrespective of pre-processing technique, you produce very similar results. The arrows that I have here are the models that were the highest models, and these are the models which I'll then go on to present in the following section. Okay, When we actually take a look at trying to interpret these models to see, do they make physical sense? We want to be able to say, all right, am I going to be able to apply these models somewhere else? Is it likely that we can transfer these through to different regions? And in order to do that, they should essentially be based on some physical reasoning. What we see for our partial least squares, and what I have here is I have the wavelengths. So from essentially 1,700 nanometers through to 25,000 nanometers. And up here we have our wave number, so depends which way you fall, which way you prefer to work, but both of them are presented. And we have presented here the fundamental absorption features which are found in these particular regions. And we see that the majority of the peaks that we find in our partial least squares coincide with either here a major peak in the water at the OH fundamental. Here we have a peak related through to carbon-oxygen stretch. And over here in our partial least squares, we find that the effect of the silicates plays an important role in our partial least squares models. And this is something that's not too surprising given that Florida has very high quartz content in their soils. And as you see, it comes through in our partial least squares modeling. Now, what happens with random forest? Okay, the same zone, and all of a sudden you see this region here, which was prominent in the partial least squares, has little to no effect in the random forest. And what you see is only these first region actually plays a role in our models. Okay, I'm going to zoom in on just that region, and you can see your OH fundamental, which was important in the partial least squares model, is less important in your random forest, but it really seems to isolate your actual carbon-carbon bonds. This is actually a triple carbon stretch instead of the single or the double, which I've shown. You have your greatest peaks here. What is your difference between your different carbon fractions? Well, you see here, recalcitrant carbon has your higher peak, whereas here you have total carbon has a higher peak just slightly next to it. So if you're trying to tease out the difference between your total carbons and your soil organic carbon or your different recalcitrant carbon, hydrolyzable carbon, you can expect to have these fractionally different importance values. Although they're all in the same type of region, they contribute different types of weights. What does this mean for modeling in the future and perhaps modeling to different regions? I'd like to take a look at our general conclusions. We found that there doesn't seem to be an ideal pre-processing technique. Multiple pre-processing techniques produce very similar results. Okay. All the carbon fractions can be predicted with high levels of precision. However, the random forest, I believe to be a superior method, at least in terms for transferability, and I think this is something that we want to test in future, perhaps using the Hawaii samples to actually see which managers, how do they manage to transfer? Because in the partial least squares, we had all those quartz samples, which are not as important in the Hawaii samples, and see whether our random forest models can actually transfer better in that, because they only focus on your carbon bonds. So random forest appears to isolate these features functionally related to the carbon properties, and thus I believe will be better at transferability. In the random forest, your fractions come out as different contributions, and that's how I believe you can tease out these different carbon pools for the future. This work would not have been possible without a really huge body of support from the University of Florida. I only arrived later in the game once all these carbon samples have been taken. So really need to thank everyone that has contributed to this project, and of course our funding from USDA. Thank you all very much.